This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Queen Charlotte, the official podcast, is a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio. Welcome back to Queen Charlotte, the official podcast, your companion behind the scenes of Shondaland's Bridgerton prequel on Netflix. I'm your host, Gabby Collins, and today we're spending time with actors Michelle Fairley and Corey Milchreist. In today's episode, we're simply carving out some time to talk about the way these performers carried young King George and Princess Augusta in their bones and how they felt when it was all done. We're excited to dive into Corey Milchreist and King George. We are inspired by what drives him, and we're going to learn more about what he brings, you know, such authenticity to his performance. We're really stoked to talk to this cool gent, not only because of his amazing acting chops, but also because of the complex character that he brought to life on screen. Young King George is troubled yet sweet, and he has captured the hearts of many Queen Charlotte fans. And we can't wait to hear from Corey about how he approaches the role and what it's been like to bring such a fascinating portrayal of a tortured king to life. Corey Milchreist, how are you doing today?
I'm okay. I'm feeling snazzy. Yeah, how are you?
Feeling snazzy. I'm feeling snazzy too.
Yeah.
Let's feel snazzy together. So, yeah, cool. Corey, of course we're here because of your remarkable performance in Queen Charlotte, A Bridgerton Story. Mm-hmm. If you could put it into one word, how did it make you feel, I guess?
The word that I would use, especially with the scene right at the end of episode 6, which is the last scene, nostalgic. But I mean, that's just boring, really.
No.
So I would say otherworldly. It's so hard Ooh. To see the story as it is without... God, it's so weird to watch my face.
Right, right.
Otherworldly and nostalgic, because your body keeps the score. I look at myself and I go, oh yeah, I remember filming that. And then suddenly I'm going, oh my, that's what I felt on that day. So it's very hard to be objective about it. And then sometimes I go, oh my God, that was such a lovely day because we had such a great laugh about that, mm-hmm. or, you know, whatever. And we had a great conversation. It's so strange.
I think otherworldly is a really interesting and good word, though.
What was your word? Or do you have one?
Oh, man. I think actually it's just, yes. There was so much that I saw that I needed to see. I also felt like, ooh, because there were moments I felt like I shouldn't have been in the room. when there were you and India together on screen were just, I felt like I needed to step aside.
And did you?
I did.
Or did you watch
it? I had to pause it. I did pause it every once in a while. Yeah. What was it like working with India?
India is phenomenal. She worked so hard, and her work is so truthful and lovely and subtle. She is the propeller of the entire narrative and does it expertly. And is also just one of the kindest people I've met. She's great.
In those moments where you're both together in those really like heart-wrenching scenes, or those moments where you are pouring your heart out as the young King George, what was that like in the moment? Because as viewers, we've got all of the sweeping music and the cuts and everything to kind of help amplify our emotion. But for you in the moment, what was that like? Does the world fall away?
Yeah, sometimes.
Tell me about your experience.
I mean, it changes day to day. That's the thing about acting is, you know, your instrument is your being, you know? So like if someone's playing the cello, it's maybe slightly more, I mean, you still, your body and your mind and your heart and is still engaged, but it's slightly more controlled. Whereas, you know, I could turn up one day and I could be feeling a really certain type of way, and then the next day completely different. So you have to be able to accept that. You can't deny where you are as a person. There were times where, you know, in really emotional moments, or like some stuff with the doctor and like more the torture scenes, you know, there would be times where I remember the scene where Charlotte comes in and rescues George.
Yes.
So I remember doing a few takes of that, and it was just so painful. Sometimes it's hard to like snap out of it, in the same way as sometimes it's hard to snap into it. You know, sometimes if you have a really emotional scene, it can be hard to, you know, your heart is going, oh, can I trust this moment? You know, whatever. And to let go into it. And then sometimes once you have let go, it's hard to, at the moment of cut, go, And I'm fine, and I'm Corey, and it's all good, because you've subconsciously and imaginatively you placed yourself in that place for a bit, and it is just pretend. But like, you know, you have to. There has to be a large section of you that does believe it. India was so brilliant, and sometimes if we were in a similar state in the scene or whatever, or if we felt a certain way about a scene, we'd both just sit and listen to the same music and try and get on the same sort of like vibration before going into a scene.
Yeah.
And also the writing is so brilliant. There's a scene where Charlotte comes in into the observatory and tries to get George to tell her that he loves her.
This conversation isn't, I cannot do this.
Do you love me?
I never wanted
do
to
you
marry.
Love me?
I never, Charlotte, please stop.
Is it because you do not believe that I could love you? I do.
And I remember reading that and going, right, there's no way that I can say those words and not sort of like break down. So I remember texting Tom, the director, going, man, please, for that scene, can we start my close-up? Because if we start wide and then we get into close-up like 6 hours later, I'm going to be dry, because there's no way that I can't save it. Do you know what I mean? Like, if I say those things, it's going to come out. And so it's a complete collaboration the whole time, you know?
Wow. And that's really, really interesting. Mm. I love what you said about being on the same vibration and listening to music with your castmates before getting into it.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
Yeah. Speaking of music, I'm just curious if you play any instruments.
Yeah.
What do you play?
I've tried to play many things in my time. I tried the violin for a while. I tried the bassoon. That was probably the strangest one. I did the cello for a bit, but I started learning classical guitar and then got an electric guitar. And it's been a long time, so I feel very guilty saying this, but if I picked it up again, it would come back quickly. But a bit of piano and also drums.
No woodwinds. It's okay. You have a thing against woodwinds, but it's fine. It's fine.
I mean, look, if we count a recorder, if we count the humble recorder,
oh, then, no.
then we're in good company. Yeah.
It just your physicality and just hearing about your prep, it just sounds like music is such an intrinsic part of you and what you bring into your into your role.
Well, my mum's a musician.
Okay.
She's a classical musician, so it's very deep rooted into how I think and like see.
I sometimes wish I was one of those people that could see sound all the time, like the synesthesia. I think that's amazing.
That's probably what I'm most jealous of in the world.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. So let's talk about some of your moments behind the scenes, working with costume and hair and makeup.
Yeah.
What about that experience, other than really just feeling that fabric, feeling the weight of those coats, but also that the freeness of that white shirt you're wearing as Farmer George? Tell me how that impacted you in your preparation or just in the moment.
Yeah, I mean, so George is someone who, you know, he has an incredibly conflicting relationship with his role, with his duty, with the pressure. And of course, when you're king, that comes with a certain uniform. The things that he wears are so intrinsically intertwined with his role. Even in more relaxed moments, what he's wearing, it's hard for him to not see the thing that is weighing him down constantly. And so for me as Corey, when I put those things on, I go, well, this isn't as comfy as like trackies and a jumper. Mm. And I can feel that a lot of the time. You know, sometimes I'm wearing braces to support it all, but you know, it can be at times quite uncomfortable. And whenever I felt that, I was like, well, what a privilege to be feeling that, because I can use that, because George, his feeling of discomfort is almost identical. You know, it's not something that he wants to wear. And exactly as you said, in those scenes where he's farming, that's the freest and happiest that he is, because he is, you know, he's free of the constraint of, yes, the duty, but also what the duty is resembled by, which is the stuff, the layers of stuff that he's having to have on his body the whole time. So it was a joy. And also Lynn Paolo, who is the head of costume, did such an astonishing job, and they are just such beautiful pieces of art.
Oh, I have to ask about your necklace.
Oh, God, yeah, my Frodo necklace. So this ring is from my mum.
Okay.
I took all my rings off and I put them round this chain. I have really embarrassing hands. Like, they are very knobbly at the knuckles.
Oh, ring fitting must be terrible.
So, like, once I get a ring on, it's, like, very hard to get off. So this is my way of wearing that ring without having to break my finger every time I take it off.
Hey, was there something special about the wedding ring that young King George wore? Do you know?
I actually have that.
You do?
Yeah, that's the one thing that I took. I put on the wedding ring for Charlotte. And George never gets a wedding ring. He's just got this signet ring.
Mm.
And I was like, why? And I think I spoke to the historical advisor. And they said, well, because he's married to the crown. He's the king. You know, it's almost like that's beneath his role. You know, which is so sad.
Yeah.
You know, because then again, it's just this man who is shackled by this duty.
Or not. I wonder if anyone out there is like, let me be a king. I vibe with that. I wonder, you know.
Imaginatively being a king is a lot cooler than the reality of being a king, especially if you don't want it. And you've also got this affliction that George has. It's like, oh my God.
You know,
it's a bad concoction.
When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with actor Corey Milchreist.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but, like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Before we jump back into our conversation with Corey, take a listen to what casting director Kelly Valentine Henry had to say about casting the well-meaning, elusive lover, young King George.
Corey and India, the scene where she's trying to get over the wall and he says to her, I'm George. And there is a softness and a beauty and a kindness that Corey, when he says, just George. And again, that was a moment I was like, you've just got the job. Or, you know, you are George.
Corey, I heard that you had a really outstanding moment during the Danbury Ball. Alicia Keys, ring any bells?
Yes.
Whoa. Well, I gotta say, I fell in love with King George when you did that deep, deep bow to the young Queen Charlotte.
Yeah.
What? That gave me chills. I fanned out right there.
Yeah, that was beautiful. So that was my idea. And every time I was like, right, whatever India does, I'm just gonna go lower than that.
Oh, so good.
This is the genius of Jack Murphy, the choreographer, because he taught me the etiquette. And so once you know the language, then you can speak. Because the deeper the bow, the more respect. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And in that moment, George is completely honoring Charlotte and Lady Danbury. And I think it was really important. You know, again, it's just subtle writing from Shonda. But George comes in, he's announced, and he comes in and he says, Lord and Lady Danbury, thank you for having me. It's not, you know, it's wonderful to be here. It's thank you for having me. I'm the fucking king.
That's right.
And I'm thanking you for welcoming me into your home that technically I own. Do you know? But it's immediately going, I'm paying reverence.
Oh, wow.
You know, you're in charge. George, I think, completely understands what it is to be oppressed. He doesn't understand it in the same systemic way that Danbury and Charlotte understand, but he does understand oppression from a concept and feeling marginalized and like you have to fit into something. I think that's actually something that subconsciously attracts the two of them from the beginning. But in that conversation that we don't see before George and Charlotte go to that ball,
right?
And I think that George was immediately like, I know that I am anxious in these circumstances, but I need to get over that because I know what I can do. I know my privilege and I know how to use it. But a beautiful night. And then when Alicia Keys came on, melted.
Is there any way that what you just said as a young King George is magnify that thinking in terms of what Queen Charlotte, A Bridgerton Story represents in the streaming landscape, period. Is there some connectivity there?
I think completely. I would actually go as far as to say I think that's probably the only thing that is most applicable from story to real life. Representation is just like immensely powerful.
Yeah.
There are going to be little girls that watch this show that go, I can be that. And then it's our job to make those people real so that the people that watch it don't see a caricature. Mm. They see positive, human, natural, organic life behind that representation.
Yeah. Something I would just wanted to go back to really quickly. You mentioned the conversation that we don't see. And you're talking about the pillow talk moment where Charlotte's like, yes. So this ball.
Wow, you are so good, right? Man. That is so impressive. That was like a 30-second scene. Right.
But I love that you say there's a conversation, because I think you could take it either way. You could be like, okay, Charlotte put it on him and is going to get what she wants. Mm. Or they had a conversation and have agreed to really be partners in this, which we see afterwards when young King George is and young Charlotte is talking after she's getting undressed, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I love
that. Yeah. And because I think if we didn't have that scene afterwards where he's going, this is more change than I thought I could ever achieve in my lifetime, then I think that there would be a question. There'd be a conversation to be had. Is she doing this? Is she using the role of, not in a malicious way, but is she using the role of George to positively change? I don't think that she is. I think that she completely has the power to do that. But also George has immense power and their understanding of life and of each other and love.
Yeah.
I think that's a dance that is mutual.
Ah, the dance. Yeah. Yeah. So the scenes you have with the doctor are anything but funny. But were there moments behind the scenes that were full of laughter when it came to those? How did you keep it light if you did at all?
I didn't have that many funny moments on set. But what was great was, because for me, like, you know, I find it very hard to like snap in, snap out. So I've got to like sort of stay in a ballpark of what's going on. But what was so great was because, you know, Tom, the director, Tom Vericker, has such a freaking wonderful ethos and vibe on set. And everyone is just, you know, people were coming up to us that had been working and that, you know, they were in their 70s and saying, this is the nicest set that you'll ever work on. These people are just phenomenal. So it was lovely on set. It wasn't necessarily like tons of laughter for me. Sometimes it was. I remember one time we were filming the scene where Charlotte is giving birth.
Oh, yeah. I thought Brimsley was really funny in that scene.
Yeah, he is. He is so funny. Tom, I remember talking about golfing or something. And then for some reason, you know, when you're so tired, you don't really know what you're doing. And then I sort of came to and I was halfway through doing this mock golf swing in like my Tom Vericker impression and American accent. And then I looked at him and I was like, I'm so sorry. I don't know what. Why have I just done that? Why have I done that? And he found it hilarious. But we had some great times right at the end of shooting. Me, Sam, who played Brimsley, Freddie, who plays Reynolds in India, we rented an Airbnb for 2 weeks rather than staying in a hotel.
Nice.
So just the four of us. Oh my God, that was so good. That was so lovely. And Freddie was so spooked because he got there first. And it's in the middle of nowhere, maybe 17th century. Oh. Really old. And he was like, guys, there's some really weird energy here. And he, you know, and then I got in and he was like, did you guys feel that cold? He'd be like, it's suddenly freezing. And then he'd see something, you know, whatever. And then we started to see stuff. And then at one point, India comes screaming down the stairs going, guys, I was just in my shower and all the lights went on and off and on and off and then just stayed off. She was panicking. And Freddie was the worst. He was, because he was so, so scared, right? And then one day he just comes down and he's so straight faced and he was like, guys, I've made the whole thing up and it was me doing the lights and it was me opening the windows. And I was like, dude, what the hell? Why would you? Yeah.
That's crazy.
My theory is that he was actually just really scared and he wanted to make other people feel scared so that he didn't.
It's good that you scared himself. Have some fun. keep it light.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, shake it off. Yeah, because I mean, some of the scenes that you're in can be super heavy.
Yes.
Geez, do you have a favorite moment from episode 4 at all?
There's a lovely moment. I think it's Reynolds' moment. It's the moment where, as a viewer, I went,
yes,
wow, this is the power that this guy has. And it's the moment where I'm at the dinner table and I'm starting to crack and there are servants looking at me and I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it. And he just comes up and he just lays a hand on my shoulder and everything relaxes and he takes a breath. And then there's a change in the music. The music in that moment is genius. It hits as soon as George's hand hits the table and it just pans from Freddie's hand to his face and there's a swell in the music and you go, oh my God, this man is carrying everything. The reason that the king is because of this man.
It's good color on this wine, Reynolds. I shall let the kitchen know, Your Majesty. Mm.
So this is the genius of Shonda, right? So like she'd taken all the dialogue out and she just described the whole thing. And then right at the end, she just wrote the line, good color on this wine, Reynolds. I shall let the kitchen know, Your Majesty. It sounds like nothing, but it's just genius, right?
Yes.
Because here's these two men that are crumbling. And they are surviving by the skin of their teeth.
Man.
And yet again, they've won the battle, but the war is very far from over. And we're not going to speak about this, but I want to tell you that I love you and I can't do anything without you, but I can't say anything. So it's good color on this wine.
Oh my goodness, Corey. Yes.
Yeah.
I love
that. That was actually mine and Freddie's first scene together.
Really?
Yeah. So that was my third day of shooting and that was Freddie's first day of shooting. So that moment, I think, is my favorite.
You know, I got to say, though, you all being able to read between those lines is I have to commend you. I mean, it just made that pop. Because you got it. You understood the assignment, as they say.
Well, that's very kind. And it's a testament to Shonda's writing, truthfully,
yeah.
and to Tom's understanding of how to express an idea and how to communicate that to actors. And I think that's the genius of Tom is, you know, because he has this bird's eye view of the whole narrative, but also he's a fantastic actor in his own right. So he can talk to you as actors. He's just genius. And so that I think that's a testament to the team.
Yeah.
Is understanding those moments.
Absolutely. There's also this moment in episode 4 and you're facing Michelle Fairley as Princess Augusta. She has just told you that your bride is on the way and you collapse into her arms.
I was really, really nervous for that scene because he has this argument with his mother and constantly and says, I don't think that I do need to marry for the good of the country and to rule. George, fear of intimacy and his abandonment trauma triggers this panic because suddenly there's this woman coming. Then he spirals and he starts to become less and less lucid.
Yeah.
And he ends up on a heap in the floor. So you've got like an enormous beginning to end there, you know,
yeah,
that you have to honor as an actor. You know, you want to honor the truth of that anger at the beginning. And there's quite a bit of wit in his argument. And then we end with him crumpled on the floor, shaking. So it's like, you know, I remember going, God, I don't know how to, I got a snap halfway through this scene and I don't know how to do that. And Tom said this brilliant thing. He comes up to me and this is the genius of Tom again. He says, what about if you're starting to lose it? But there is a part of you that can hear yourself and knows that it doesn't make sense and knows that there's a line of very important people in front of you and then is trying to overcome it by talking more and making sense of it to them to go, no, I am talking about what I'm meant to be talking about. And I do know what I'm saying. But in the doing of that, he hears himself again and it's just getting less and less sensical. And this is the brilliant thing, you know, because like acting is like, yeah, there's intention, but there has to be obstacle. And yeah, the obstacle there is that these things are coming out, but the need is to convince them that you are strong, that I'm not losing it, you know? Mm-hmm. And there's something so tragic about that. And it's just a genius note in the moment that he goes, oh, let's try this. And that's the take that we used.
Wow. As you describe that, it reminds me of how delicate mental health is and the thinking of someone who is ailing just like that. Of all of the things that the show talks about mental health, I think in a way that's not head on or making a decision or choice or opinion about it, but it is a part of the fabric of what is happening in this family, in this life, and that's life, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think more than anything, George and his story isn't necessarily an exploration of mental health, but it is an exploration of a man's relationship to his own shame and to his own self-hatred as a result of his affliction.
Ooh.
You know, it's the moments where he comes out and has realized that he's lost himself and lost his dignity, or believes that he's lost his dignity. Those, for me, are the most tragic moments, you know, because there's a man who is conscious and who is lucid and who has believed that he has exposed a fundamentally unlovable part of himself.
Definitely thought it was like a classic imposter syndrome moment when you are in uniform, right before you give the speech. And your hand is shaking. I'm like, wow, he's really filling that suit out with imposter syndrome. And then you get into the back of the carriage and you're all curled up. I just remembered that. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So in the moment where you're in the carriage and you're curling under, cowering away from the task at hand, what were you tapping into?
That moment in the carriage, that was the last take I shot.
Oh,
of the entire project.
The entire project.
The entire thing. That was that shot of me collapsing in the carriage. Not the one outside from when Reynolds sees George, but the one inside as the carriage is moving. That was shot on an EastEnders, which is a soap opera from London, on an EastEnders soundstage studio on the outskirts of London, on a green screen. And that was the very last. I think we maybe shot 2-3 takes of it. It was very quick. And to be honest, I don't think it's very healthy to use your own life directly. But in that moment, it was very hard not to, because most of what I was feeling was, what the hell am I going to do after this? I don't want to say goodbye to this character. I don't want to say goodbye to working with these people. And I was feeling very emotional at the time anyway. So when something is so overwhelming like that and it fits so perfectly with what you're having to film on the day, I think it's a bit of a cheat, and I you know, it's not something that I'm proud of, but I did. I just completely allowed that to take over.
So after that scene, did you step out of the carriage, and then what did you see?
The entire room is just black walls, black floor, black ceiling, very, very high roof. And yes, there's just this carriage. And then like three walls of green screen, and Leo, brilliant cameraman, who was crouched down, was getting some footage of me. And India actually was there. She came to my last day. She wasn't shooting. She'd already wrapped the entire thing. Tom comes up to me and gives me a very big hug, and then I hug Leo. For 8 months, basically every day, I tapped into that map.
Right.
And suddenly that was it. That day was very, very otherworldly.
Corey Milchreist, it has been such a pleasure to spend this time with you.
It has been such a pleasure. Thank you so much. You're very, very good at this. And those questions were, so.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it was an absolute pleasure.
Don't go anywhere. There's more from behind the scenes of Queen Charlotte of Bridgerton story right after this.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it.
Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but, like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
With her impeccable flair for language, Michelle Fairley has earned numerous accolades and the adoration of fans worldwide. She has graced both stage and screen with her unforgettable performances. They live in our minds rent-free, do they not? And now, as Princess Augusta in Queen Charlotte, A Bridgerton Story, she's added yet another unforgettable role to her already impressive chest of characters. She's proven time and again that she's a force to be reckoned with. Michelle Fairley, welcome to Queen Charlotte, the official podcast. How are you doing today?
Hi, Gabriel. I'm very well. I'm a little bit nervous, but here goes.
Oh, yes. Yeah. We're going to jump right into it. We have to talk about Princess Augusta and the young King George. And there's just so much that happens in that episode. And I had an opportunity to speak with Tom Verica. And what I told him was, we already fall in love with Princess Augusta as the person that is maybe not the one that you would first think of to fall in love with, mm-hmm. but we get to meet Mama Princess Augusta in episode 4. I was wondering if you had any life experiences or perspectives on Princess Augusta's role as someone who is losing power with her adult child, losing power in the grand scheme of this new union. Could you tell us a little bit about your preparation and how you fuel that role with your own life?
I think, you know, as one gets older, and particularly in this business, you know, we've all missed opportunities in our lives that we would have wanted. So you just have to get on with it, and you lose things, and you just have to get over that grief. And I don't think you ever forget the grief. It's like, you know, it's a form of death, really. You learn to live with it again. You know, it does change you, but you keep going. You have to keep going. And I think for Augusta, she did not have the luxury of giving up. She had to fight for her position within the court. She had to protect her children so that they would ultimately be royal. And she ate humble pie with her father-in-law to achieve King George III's position.
Mm. When Princess Augusta reveals her own turmoil and her own journey to young Lady Agatha Danbury, it gave me chills. It really gave me chills. And just your delivery of it was so... I felt exactly what you were saying, that everybody experiences some level of loss and grief, and you don't have to live the exact same circumstances to understand that feeling. It just transcends.
That scene is brilliant. I love that you get to see another side of her. And, you know, the fact is that, you know, we just think that she's this hard-nosed, driven woman, but actually she has created a persona around her. She has a web or an armor around her so that you actually can't get in there. But That doesn't mean that she doesn't feel things and that she doesn't have empathy and she doesn't understand what's going on in front of her. You know, she can read these people like they think they can read her because she's been in that position. She's been in the position of vulnerability. You know, she had to secure not only her position, but her children's position and their rightful position as heirs to the throne. So she had to plot and scheme to keep her position there and basically, you know, befriend a man whom her husband detested. And it was an incredibly acrimonious relationship.
Wow.
And so when Agatha Danbury comes to her crying her eyes out and feeling sorry for herself, I think, you know, Augusta goes, okay, a life lesson for you, young lady.
Pear brandy. I have it shipped in from Germany. Now drink. And cease from crying this instant, please.
I am sorry, I...
No, I do not want to know your burdens or hear what problems plague your life. Nor do I care.
Michelle, that is one of my absolute favorite moments in the entire series. When you pull out the pear brandy, it, oh my goodness, I had to press pause and walk around because it was just so good. And the thing is, I kept asking myself after about seven times watching it, who is there for Agatha? Who is teaching Agatha how to navigate this society and her role as a woman? And it's Princess Augusta. I just literally just now realized the answer is it's Princess Augusta. She's there.
There are different generations for a start. They come from different countries. Their life experiences are completely different. But, you know, they are still women and they're struggling and they have struggled. And it's about how you're going to cope with the continual struggles that life is going to throw at you. Do you know what I mean? You can't just cry all the time. You've just got to sort of like have a backbone, get on with it, take the blow and learn from it. But also as well, don't show your weakness. Don't show your weakness, particularly in court.
Yeah. I really hope that anyone who watched that scene is able to recognize someone in their life who is that, a Princess Augusta for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's like being cruel to be kind. You know, it's as simple as that, basically. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, Augusta, you know, she has strict rules, but she's not a cruel person. She isn't cruel. She genuinely has empathy for women. But she's a tough taskmaster because she's had it tough. And I think that's just the way she is. That's the form that she has molded into through her own life experience. But she's an intelligent woman. She's, you know, navigated her path pretty well so far. And I don't think she ever thought of herself as a sort of a particular sort of a guide, because it doesn't happen with Charlotte. And it's two different types of thinker clashing heads, you know, and it should be this way. No, it's definitely this way, because that's the way it's always been, and that's it. But then I'm the young one, I'm the new one, I want to change things. And you see both sides of the argument. But I think for her, there is regret because she wasn't able to change it and have it her way. You know, but she had to toe the line. But she did that for her children.
Yes. Because of your beautiful, illustrious career, I'm curious if you had a Princess Augusta or a pear brandy moment.
Oh, I've had so many.
Oh.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I mean, we all have wobblies. Do you know what I mean? Some of us more than others. And some, I mean, that's part of every job you do. You have a wobble. You know, it's like, oh, my God, how did I get here? What am I doing here? I'm an imposter. You know, am I going to get fired? You know, that's it. You constantly have that dialogue.
Is there a story you'd willing to share with us?
About?
A pear brandy moment?
Oh, God. Oh, Well, I personally don't drink pear brandy.
Oh, I mean.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, there's so many. I did a play years ago. The brilliant Harold Pinter directed it. And it was a play called Oleana. And I was terrified. Absolutely. It was a two-hander. And I was absolutely terrified. Harold had a fridge in the rehearsal room. So he would go and open There'd always be some lovely wine in there. And I was too terrified to even have a glass of wine. But Harold Pinter got me through it, as did the brilliant Dennis Lawson as well. So, you know, without them actually knowing it, but that's just fear of the unknown. And that's what I mean about everybody having a wobble on every job that they do. Well, I know I do. And then you realise just how lucky you are to even have the job. And you should be so bloody grateful.
That's a great story. Michelle, I was wondering if you could help me understand a little bit about the Great Experiment. I feel like I'm unable to grasp why Princess Augusta cares so much. I mean, yes, she wants to ensure her line, but why does she care so much that these two societies become the ton? What is in it for her?
My taking of it, the Great Experiment, was to show that they are an open society. I mean, it's a very arrogant of them, you know, but I know that's tongue in cheek from Shonda's point of view, you know, considering that that is an experiment. The Great Experiment is the marriage, you know, is the marriage going to work? You know, this has to work. You know, this has to work for the line to, you know, to continue.
Maybe that's like the magic of it, because I was always watching your performance like, what is this woman up to? Why does she care? And yeah, you absolutely kept us super curious and wanting to get into your head all the way to the end. The moment that you walk up to young Queen Charlotte, played by India, in the final episode, and you kind of like pass on the torch.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
Yes, I felt like, maybe she feels like her work is done, and maybe she is just this. I don't know. I can't put my finger on it, but I think that is what makes me a little obsessive about Princess Augusta.
From my point of view, that was the moment when she's finally accepted Charlotte, I think, as you know, as an equal in terms of what she can do. You know, because I think Augusta's main love is her son, is George, and trying to protect him throughout his entire life and being mistrustful of Charlotte in the first place and not allowing her the knowledge of George's malad. And so seeing how Charlotte has developed with that and her acceptance of it, and not only the acceptance of it, but in terms of dealing with it and just watching these two young people fall in love, have mutual respect for each other and treat each other with respect in a way that Augusta hadn't experienced. So that moment, basically a thank you to Charlotte.
Wow, a thank you, wow. Okay, I also have a thing for how stately and large you can still remain within these huge spaces. Maybe it's your costume, maybe it's the timbre of your voice, but you just fill the space. And I'm wondering if there was anything about the costume design that influenced your physicality. I saw you as almost like a chess piece, like you are moving a lot while you were making all of these like chess moves with your mind.
That's really kind. Thank you. I think the costumes are extraordinary, and I think Lynn Paolo and her team were just incredible in what they achieved and how they constantly, you know, had delight and joy in creating costumes for Augusta, because she's the elder statesperson there, do you know what I mean? So she can have, apart from the Bridgerton queen, not young Charlotte, because she's the head woman. So there was definitely a contrast between the younger characters' costumes and Augusta's costumes, because she's old school. And so there was more pomp and ceremony there and more chance to be sort of OTT as well. Mm. And it's also a chance for her to show off of her position and, you know, and she's to be respected. So, but I think as well, is that what lovely thing of sitting in state, you know, in her home.
I was wondering, are you wearing a wig?
Me?
Yes. Or are you wearing?
No. Oh no, sorry. In the production. Sorry.
Michelle.
this, Yes, I am, actually.
You are?
I am. And it's the first time ever in my career I've worn a wig. I've
had hair out.
Pieces. Yeah, I've had hair pieces and things like that, but never a full-on wig. And when we were doing the camera tests, one was the one that I ended up having all the time, and the other was a white one, which I personally loved. But I think the decision was made, no, you're not going to go with that one. We'll keep her with the dark hair. And they used to change it ever so slightly, depending on the situation, if they were going to a ball or if it was just tea or if it was just, you know, a normal meeting or if it was the wedding, you know, there'd be lots of little intricate. Once it was on, it was stayed in place. It was made for my head as well. And it was so comfortable. Mm. And the real hair as well. Mm. So I was very, very privileged position to have a wig made. And also, you know, to have the amazing hair and makeup team to sort of whip it into shape every time I was wearing it.
Oh, yeah. There was an overhead shot of you in episode 4, and we got to see all of these coils and curls on your head. And I was just like, wow, that is intricate. That's a lot. It was really beautiful.
Absolutely. And then they had these little, you know, the little ringlets that are at the side of the ears.
Right.
I think I went from sort of like 2 to possibly 4, depending on the occasion. You know, those were separate, you know, that could be clicked in, you know, attached to the wig. And and then there was always keeping them, you know, so that they don't become too droopy, you know, as the day goes on. So if you weren't, you know, if you weren't on camera, you'd have a massive big sort of like beehive, or, you know, netting all over you to keep the wig in place, and also to keep your ringlets from drooping, you know. So
yes,
like a snaggy old pair of tights at the end of the day. There's a lot of work that you don't see, you know, in a massive team of people to achieve that.
Michelle Fairley, thank you so much for your time and for your artistry. We love seeing you on screen, and I again thank you for Princess Augusta and all of those moments that gave me chills. We are so happy that you joined us today.
Gabrielle, thank you so much indeed. It's been a pleasure and a privilege to talk to you. And thank you for the time and for your questions.
Michelle, you have once again left us in awe. It was a privilege to speak with you today. And thanks to the enchanting Corey Milchreist again for unearthing King George and speaking from the heart. Make sure you come back, because on the next episode, Adjoa Ando bequeaths knowledge that deepens our understanding of the Great Experiment and Lady Danbury's backstory.
How do we survive on a pragmatic level? How do we survive on a spiritual level? How do we survive on a psychological level? We have to make relationship where we can. Human beings are built to be in communion with one another. You put a bunch of women on tour together for long enough, we'll all have our periods at the same time. You know, we're biologically made to be in communion. And so when you are the only one, which is an experience that many people of color will have, you know, in the West, you need to make your alliances where you can. And you need to be generous and open-hearted and strategic. Because it's your duty to get in a position and then you help the next generation.
I can't wait for you to hear her story. Queen Charlotte, the official podcast, is executive produced by Sandy Bailey, Lauren Homan, Alex Alche, Tyler Klang, and me, Gabrielle Collins. Our producer and editor is Tari Harrison. Subscribe to the podcast anywhere you get your favorite shows. Get the book. I'm a crispy turn the page, smell the binding kind of queen, but you can download it. And you can find Queen Charlotte, A Bridgerton Story on Netflix. We'll see you next week. Queen Charlotte, the official podcast, is a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio. For more podcasts, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
You've probably heard a lot about electrified vehicles lately. Well, Toyota has electrified options for every lifestyle. We've got hybrids, no plug needed.
All right, let's go.
But we also have plug-in hybrids, if that's your thing. You can even go 100% electric in the Toyota BZ4X. With so many options for reducing carbon emissions, Toyota is electrified, diversified. Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.